I always thought it seemed a bit of a waste when someone died. Their body either gets set on fire or buried under the ground. When someone moves out of a house or building, other people tend to move in, or at least find another use for it. It was this thought that led me to my new venture. Could I find a genuinely productive use for corpses after their inhabitants had moved on? Of course, in books and films, reanimation and necromancy is all about magic, the black arts. But I was thinking in a slightly more practical way. What do I need to do, build and install, to turn a human body into a piece of operational machinery? I'm not talking about a decaying zombie shambling along, arms outstretched, on an endless quest to feed on brains and entrails. For me, it's just a practical solution to a number of problems. The human race spends a fortune burning and burying its dead. We also require an incredible amount of manual labour to maintain our so-called advanced civilization. This labour is either carried out by employing people, expensive, or by building machinery to do it for us, also expensive. So I thought, why can't the dead do our work for us? We just need to find a way to get them off their arses and stop them rotting. The latter part had already been figured out long ago in morgues and funeral parlours, so I was already halfway there. Experimentation was vital here, but it's not easy to get access to human corpses. The first prototype piece of neural circuitry I developed was for cats and dogs. These I adopted, regularly, from local kennels and rescue services, and promptly drowned. I used copper wiring threaded through the muscles to send delicate amounts of tiny electric jolts. These could gradually be honed into patterns and sequences, and the sequences into basic tasks. It wasn't long before I was able to take Pongo, my recently deceased Dalmatian, down the park for a game of undead catch. Cats were difficult, and a bit too small to work on. My biggest success on that front was with a particularly angry-looking dead Moggy. I managed to get him walking across the room like he was dancing to a Bee Gees track. After the basics were proven to work on animals, I needed to get my hands on some dead humans. Getting a job as a cleaner at a local funeral parlour allowed me to take massive strides towards having my first humans up on their feet. Unfortunately, I was sacked after only 3 weeks for being a really shite cleaner. If the impatient bastard of a manager had waited another fortnight, she could have had about 6 cleaners, and they wouldn't have needed any pay, rest, breaks, or time off. Having said that, I suppose the whole finding another use for dead people thing would actually render her business obsolete in the long run. I was really close by now, and as you've probably guessed, I ended up going down the old Birkenhair route. I started combing through every local rag I could get my hands on, feverishly consuming the births, marriages, and deaths sections. Cremations were no use, and it was the cemetery stuff I kept an eye out for. That was the slightly less grim side of it. I don't miss those 2 a.m. rises, heading out in the car with a spade and box of bin liners in the boot. If only I could make a dead person do this for me, I thought. That was entrepreneurism 101 though. Find a problem and solve it. I began to think of myself as a necropreneur before I realised it made me sound like I was having sex with the corpses. I wasn't. It took nearly 6 months to develop Jeeves, my first undead butler. A balding corpse who couldn't have been any older than 50 when he kicked the bucket. I had Jeeves doing most of the tasks around my flat in Glasgow. Mostly cleaning jobs. I drew the line at having him touch my food. And I wasn't keen on the way his hands seemed to stew like 2 hams in a slow cooker when he washed the dishes. But the dead were always going to have their limitations. I needed a lot more room and privacy for my work, so I bought a very remote and semi-derelict roadside hotel in the Highlands. It was spacious and had a huge basement where I could do all the messy work. the slicing, draining and stitching. At first, I worked towards building a large complement of staff for my new abode. And, after a while, ended up with a small surplus of working zombies who could be programmed to do surprisingly complex manual tasks. It was time to take my venture to the next stage. And for that, I needed a suitable client. I didn't need to look far. Nigel Sims, oil tycoon and professional slimy bastard. He was on the front page of a number of tabloids at least once a week. He owned half the North Sea, and there wasn't a thing he hadn't been up in court for. I figured Nigel was the type of guy who would kill his own grandparents to save 50 pence, so I put together my business proposal. It took a while to get through to Nigel. I think his staff suspected me of being a plucky and ambitious investigative journalist, someone trying to break the next big story about him in one of his dodgy ventures. I'm sure he deals with a lot of those. Once he realised I was actually someone proposing a dodgy venture rather than trying to expose one, he was all ears. "Nigel," I said, "you spend a fortune flying your workforces out to oil platforms in the middle of the sea. You need to pay them, feed them, give them acceptable living conditions. You pay for their sick days, their insurance, their training, and their pensions. What if I told you I could eliminate all of these costs?" 2 months later, 3 helicopters packed with the strongest, healthiest, and most recently dead zombies I could put together delivered Sims his new workforce. The trial ground was a drilling platform 150 miles north off the coast of Aberdeen. Naturally, we had to keep this as quiet as possible. Sims was stressed out about the helicopter pilots, who must have at least suspected something wasn't right with their human cargo. What those pilots didn't know was that they'd be joining that workforce upon their arrival at the platform. In the meantime, I decided to do some work to the old hotel, a fresh coat of paint on the outside, and a general tidy up around the building, and I got it looking semi-decent. I'd already gone down the original Burke and Hare route. Now it was time to try the more conventional approach. I was keen to find the freshest specimens, and digging up graves just wasn't scalable. I stuck up a vacancy sign out on the road, but I turned away couples and families. That would have been a bit too complicated. Every time a big group turned up, I just told them we were full and forgotten to change a sign. Well, one stormy evening, a cyclist pulled in. A French guy in his late 20s. This was the type of customer that interested me. Très bien. I came out to let him lock his bike away in the old shed, then led him up to the room I'd furnished, told him to get a shower and warm up, and I'd prepare some hot food for him. After he'd showered, he came down and gratefully accepted the arsenic-laced mug of steaming tea I handed him. On the whole, it was a real pleasure to prepare a body that hadn't even reached the rigor mortis stage yet. This is the future, I said to myself. No more of this grave robbing shite. Things were good after that. My systems ran like clockwork. I was drawing up lists of potential new clients and preparing to expand my empire. Then, one wet Monday morning, I received a phone call from Sims. "They're fucking falling apart," he told me. The harsh, salty sea winds had been stripping the skin right off them, apparently. I said I was certain it would have the opposite effect, kind of marinate them like strips of beef jerky. "Salt's a preservative, Nigel," I told him. This prompted an angry response. "Well, we're finding fingers and fucking toes lying all over the place. And no doubt soon it'll be arms and legs. I need these bastards replaced." I told him I'd need a few weeks and began to work on the preservatives and vitamins I'd been injecting into my specimens. I started doubling the amounts each corpse was getting as I reanimated them. I also boosted a couple of the already operational zombies I had, just to do some A-B split testing. The next batch I sent up to him were so hardy looking that we could have sent them to work in the Sahara Desert without fear of them cooking. I went back to work in the meantime. It was a rotten summer, even by Scottish standards. and the amount of soggy foreign travellers wandering in was really keeping me busy. Then, the strangest thing happened. My security alarm tripped around 3 a.m. one morning. I panicked at first because I thought it might be the police or even a burglar. Then, when I checked my CCTV monitors, I saw that it wasn't someone trying to break in. It was someone trying to break out. The thing was, though, I didn't have any guests staying. Now, understand that my necromancy has never been based on any magic, mysticism, or any of that shite. I'm an electrician. A sparky. I just wire things up to make them work in certain ways. So why was I looking into the monitor and watching this dead bastard seeing himself out? I recognised him as the French cyclist from months ago. And the worst of it was that he seemed to be trying to get to the shed where I'd put his bike. Once I'd gone out and caved his skull in with a baseball bat, I disconnected all his wiring and buried him. I checked my records and I noticed that he was one of the zombies who'd been given the new formula to help preserve them for longer. This was an isolated incident, but I was still worried about any repeats. The next day I phoned Nigel, but his secretary told me he'd flown out to the platform 2 days ago to check on things. And she said it was strange that she hadn't heard back from him and that he should have returned yesterday. Had the double dose of preservatives actually been reawakening and stimulating cells in their previously rotting brains? I began to panic and decided I should decommission the 30 or so that I had working in the hotel, at least until I could do some tests to try and find out some more. But that's when someone started to bang on my office door. I ran to my CCTV monitors, but they'd all been disconnected. And I can hear them now. There's a lot of them out there in the hall. They don't sound like they'll be going away anytime soon. It's a good job I've got some arsenic powder in my desk drawer. I wonder if they'll try to reanimate me. That would be just my luck. I'm gonna go over to the sink. Put the kettle on.